let's say you're just getting into photography. You did a family session. It's even your own family, right? You did set your camera up on a tripod. You shot your own family session. Now you're, for the next 4 or 5 hours, you're in your office on the computer editing versus sending it off to Imagine, having it back in 2 minutes. And that those four to six hours, you're now playing with your grandkids or your kids or whatever it might be, rather than being in an office editing photos. What can I do with that time back?
Hey, welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast. I'm your host, Raymond Hatfield, and today we are chatting with photographer Scott Wyden-Kivowitz about AI photo editing and how it can help you to become a better photographer that you want to be. But first, the Beginner Photography Podcast is brought to you by CloudSpot. They have everything that you need to build a thriving photography business for you to impress your clients, deliver a professional experience, and even streamline your workflow all in one platform. So grab your free forever account today at deliverphotos.com and only upgrade when you and your business are ready. Now, Scott has been on the podcast before, back in episode 122, and I was even able to meet him down at Imaging USA this year. Scott is he's a great guy. You know, he's super knowledgeable about all things kind of future and tech. And today he works for a company called Imagine AI, which offers AI photo editing. And as you're going to hear in this interview, it really isn't just for volume shooters or professionals, but also for people like you and me, who just love the process of shooting maybe a little bit more than editing. You're also going to learn how to understand your own editing style, right? It's not about removing editing. It's about incorporating it into your workflow, how embracing efficiency is going to allow you to do more of what you love, and how to maintain your creativity and control when using external tools. So with that, let's go ahead and get on into today's interview with Scott Wyden-Kivowitz. Tell me, when did you know that photography was going to play an important role in your life?
That's really interesting. I originally was going to college for music, so I didn't think photography was going to play any role in my life. However, while I was going to see bands play and touring myself, I always had a camera with me and I was always photographing bands, and then eventually started photographing their press photos, like their media kit photos. And it wasn't until I realized I hated music theory that I switched to photography, because I always loved photography as well. And my biological father and my grandfather are both hobbyist photographers. And so I inherited their cameras and I'm like, let me try it. And I switched to photography in college and realized I loved all the theory of photography, like the shutter speeds, the apertures, what happens when you throw a flash into the mix, all of it. So I feel like that's when I knew, like, this is it. Photography, whether I'm shooting or whether I'm on the business side of things to educate photographers, I knew that was my future.
So I feel like in talking with a lot of photographers that I have on the podcast, and I'm sure that you felt the same way, do you find that, like, there seems to be two camps of photographers, like those who get into it strictly for like the creative element, like, oh, I can create something so interesting. And then those who are really interested in the technical side and being able to like kind of put these pieces together. Did you fall into that latter category?
I would actually say I'm sort of in between. I love the creative part. I can't paint. My grandmother was a painter. I can't paint. I can't draw. But I felt that I could always create something really beautiful or exciting or whatever it might be with photos. So I enjoy the creative part, but I think I probably lean a little bit more towards I enjoy the technical parts more than anything. I think you're right. But I do think there is that like gray area in between somewhere, that there's that little overlap.
Yeah. Well, it's fun when you can, like, when you know how to use the tool, and then you see something in your head and then you can go after it and then you actually achieve it. Like, that's a really cool, that's a really cool feeling. So then did you graduate from college with a degree in photography? Is that what you got?
Photography technology, in fact.
There we go. We are going back to the technical side. That is you.
Yeah. So the school I went to, they didn't have just a photography degree. They had photography technology. I was very fortunate the school had a full color and black and white darkroom. It had a full iMac digital lab, where at that point it was Photoshop was the only, Lightroom didn't exist at that point. So there was a combination of, you have to learn the technology behind film photography and what to do with it, but you also have to learn the world is transitioning to digital, so start learning Photoshop. It was a wide range of things. A beautiful thing is they had at least at the time, they had a budget where every student had a Hasselblad to have for the entire year. Wow. And every other student you had to pair up had a large format camera for the entire year.
Really?
So they had a really good budget for photography. And so I got to learn not only how to, you know, use those cameras properly with in the studio or out in the environment, but also process and print from film to the actual print output. So I got to do it all and learn it all. It was a lot of fun.
What do you think is missing today? Like, obviously, most people getting into photography today, strictly digital, that's the easiest thing to do, right? You just get into it. Yeah. Oftentimes now, a lot of photographers get into film photography much later. But like getting into photography today, just in that digital world, do you think that there's anything that photographers are missing or just don't get by not being in that world of film photography anymore?
Yeah, I think that is exactly it, actually. I think a lot of people getting into the digital realm immediately, whether they pick up a film camera eventually or not, I feel like they are missing out on truly understanding what it used to be and how difficult it was that you couldn't just take 1,000 photos at a wedding or 300 photos of one fashion client in the studio, whatever it is. You had to take your time, figure out the light ahead of time before you click that shutter button. I feel like that was something that a lot of people are missing. Yes, there's film labs out there. You can just send off the film and shoot film. But again, you're missing the experience and the disappointment if you got it wrong, because that was that cost you a lot of money at that point, a lot of time at that point. Whereas now, if you get it wrong, it's just, okay, well, I'll take 500 more. So I feel like that is a missed opportunity for a lot of people to really learn what their craft truly came from, to respect and understand it more now. I'm not saying it like it has to come back, but it is in some ways you kind of wish it would.
Right. It's like, I don't remember where I heard this from, but somebody said, like, if you build a house with just like a handsaw and a hammer, you're going to appreciate a circular saw and like a nail gun so much more.
Yeah.
And I think that that's kind of it, because I too shot a lot of film growing up and developed it myself. And it was it's a wild experience. And today a lot of that is missing. But not that I think that it takes away from the photographers and what it is that we create, because again, like, it's just another tool and it's how we use it, right? At the end of the day, like, if you know how to, I feel like in photography, a lot of times the ends justify the means, right? Like, if you get a photo that can emotionally connect with somebody, it doesn't matter if like you took that photo on auto, it doesn't matter if you shot it on, you know, large format, it doesn't matter if you set up the lighting or if it was just naturally just beautiful right then. A compelling photo is a compelling photo. So we need to figure out how to get more compelling photos. And with digital, I think a lot of it is just that, like, it's so much easier to just continue shooting and then hope for the best, which isn't necessarily the way that I would suggest most people getting into it. But that's kind of where we're at today. So it's like, let's figure out how to help photographers who are there and achieving better photos. So tell me a little bit about the company that you work for, because y'all are doing something amazing. And I think that it's helping a lot of photographers as well, kind of, again, achieve more impactful photos quicker.
Yeah. So the quick summary of what Imagine does is we are a post-production company. So our app is a standalone app that works on Mac or Windows. And it's at our core, we're an AI software company. So our AI can learn how you edit in Lightroom. At the moment, it's Lightroom Classic only. That is changing very soon. And we can learn how you would edit in Lightroom. And once we've got what we call an AI profile, we can then edit for you 1,500 photos in 10 minutes or less. So you can knock out a wedding in no time. We've got photographers that are doing three or four day South Asian weddings, and they send it to Imagine before they go to sleep on the last night. And when they wake up, everything's done. They could, if they want, deliver a 4-day wedding the next day. Now, that is like the core of what Imagine does. We started about 4 years ago doing editing. And since then, we've also come out with AI culling. So we can analyze your photos and do selections for you based on your preferences and do the culling for you. And also, we now have automated cloud backups for your files. And it's a very photographer-specific method of backing up. We're backing up while you're sending to us to cull or while you're sending us to edit. And if you do edit with Imagine, then your edit data is stored alongside your raw files. So that way, if you're in a true disaster scenario, if you lost everything, you could recover your raw files with your edits as if you never lost them. So That is the gist of what Imagine does.
This is super cool. As somebody who shot weddings for 10 years, I think for me, my biggest pain point outside of sometimes getting clients was the editing process, because it's like, I loved shooting. I got into photography because I loved this ability to create something. As you said, you know, you're not a painter. I was not a painter. My drawing skills were absolute garbage. Like, if my son and I, or my daughter and I, were to do like a drawing contest, you wouldn't be able to know, like, oh, this one is the adult, this one's the child. Like, it's terrible. It's real bad. Yeah. So being able to create something with my camera has always been something that I valued, but the editing process has never been fun for me. It's never really been something that I enjoyed. Yeah. So this is something that like can allow a lot of photographers to give them that space to be able to get that done and then continue to shoot. Yeah.
I've always kept my editing simple for a very specific reason, not necessarily because I hate it, because I do hate it, but more because I'm actually colorblind. So in college, my professor would actually give me the guidance of like, okay, go back to the dark room. You got to make this adjustment. Post college, you know, I would rely on the color checker passport. I would rely on a color monkey for my monitor. I'd rely on my wife, who is really good with color, to give me some guidance in all my editing, make sure the colors are good. But now I just use Imagine. I don't have to worry about it. The colors are spot on every time. So that's a big advantage. Whether you hate editing or you have a physical disability to make editing more difficult, now you have a solution.
Wow. I had never even thought about that. That is awesome. So okay. So then technical question then real quick about that. So you have to provide some sort of reference for Imagine to be able to edit off of, right?
Great question. We have three methods. One, the bread and butter, what we started with 4 years ago, was send us 3,000 or more previous edits that you've done, and we will learn from that. And a process to learn from takes less than 24 hours. The other method, which we also started with, is called Talent AI Profiles, which are, we've partnered with some of the fantastic photographers, many of which have been on your show, and their editing style is actually built into the app that anybody can use. So whether you are new to photography, whether you are not comfortable editing, you're not confident in your editing, whatever it might be, you can use one that's built in right away. It's available to you. And the third, which is our newer method, is it's called a light personal AI profile, which is you can actually train it based on a Lightroom Classic preset combined with a survey to personalize that to you. And just like a regular personal AI profile, it can learn from you over time and just get better and better and better. And that process takes about 10 seconds to build a profile, and then you can use it. So we have three methods to get started with Imagine.
That is super cool. So for you, did you had to upload your own photos to create your own profile? Is that right? Hey, Raymond here. If you're sometimes baffled by which camera settings to use, then I've got just the thing for you. My free guide, Picture Perfect Camera Settings. It's a fantastic starting point for anybody eager to understand the basics of camera settings in various shooting scenarios. And it's tailored to beginners who want to get out of auto mode, providing clear, easy-to-follow suggestions on where to start with your settings. So whether you're capturing a stunning landscape or a family portrait, Picture Perfect Camera Settings will help you to get off of automatic mode and explore the possibilities your camera offers. Remember, mastering photography settings is a journey, and this guide is your first step and the perfect resource to guide you towards finding the right settings for your style. So grab your copy today at perfectcamerasettings.com and start your journey to better photos.
So I did do that. I have two profiles that I use on a regular basis and some that I just play around with. I've been toying around. Did you see Asteroid City? No. Okay.
There's a Wes Anderson movie, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, no, I have.
So I've been playing around trying to create a profile. I'm not great at editing and I have a color disability, so I'm not so good at it, but I've been playing around with trying to make a profile that basically does that. Look, just not for like, I would never use it for a client, but just for fun. I love that look. Super orangey teal pale tones. I love it. So I've been trying to work on that, but like, you can have as many profiles as you want or need, so we don't limit it.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't even think of that, because I know personally, and actually yesterday I was re-listening to my interview with Ben Chrisman, and he was saying that like for weddings, his look is very different than his own personal look for his own like family photos. For the family photos, he loves that like dark black and white contrasty gritty type of photo, whereas obviously for weddings it's a little more polished, crisp, personal or professional. So that's great, that makes sense. So then let me ask, because this is the beginner photography podcast, right? A lot of the people listening right now are having a hard enough time learning how to use their camera. Like some of them haven't even thought about editing yet.
Yeah.
And again, for me, I knew right away, I was like, the idea of learning Lightroom for me, I was like, ugh, I already know that I don't want to learn editing. This is something that I don't want to do. But now it seems like there's other options. So let me ask, because I'm kind of unclear here and I want people to fully understand maybe what is the perfect use case for Imagine. Does Imagine work for photographers who shoot like as a hobby and they go out on the weekend, they have fun, they photograph their family? Or is this more geared towards the professional shooter shooting for paid gigs?
So we have the whole gamut using Imagine. It obviously, like, it's made for the high volume shooters who are doing weddings or they're doing corporate events or they're doing full family sessions or anything that's like, I have to edit a lot of photos and I don't want to edit a lot of photos, or I'd rather work on other things than the editing, right? I'd rather do the fine retouching maybe than the editing, whatever it is. So that's what it was originally made for. But we have landscape photographers that are using Imagine. We have real estate photographers that are using Imagine. You name it. We have a lot of pet photographers. What's it called? I can't think of the name off the top of my head. Like people just go to horse shows and just photograph horses.
Equestrian.
Equestrian, yes. We have a lot of equestrian photographers that are using it. Everybody. Any type of photography you can think of, they're using Imagine. Newborn photography, which they might be delivering 10 photos, like a lot of newborn photographers using Imagine. So it really could be anybody. And for the beginner, if you're not editing yet, if you're not comfortable editing yet, you don't know what to do, I think the Talent AI profiles is definitely the way to go, because you don't have to think about creating a style or learning from you when you can't, because you don't have anything yet. It's more just, let me open the app, drop in the photos, and have one of these talent profiles do the work for me. And you can then do adjustments there. If you want to learn, you can then have it do the adjustments for you. I mean, you can have it, you can then do your final adjustments afterwards back in your editor. But yeah, and just to foreshadow a little bit, I'm not exactly sure when this feature is going to be released versus when the episode airs. So I'm going to preface this with, this is coming, the ability to edit without the need of Lightroom Classic. So any app in the Adobe ecosystem, just from a folder, if you want to just use Bridge and use Adobe Camera Raw inside of Bridge, or Photoshop and Adobe Camera Raw, or Lightroom CC on the local side, you can still use Imagine. Folder support is around the corner from the day we're recording this. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So again, like that's one of those things that a lot of photographers, they have a hard time with the subscription model of paying for editing when they don't even like editing, you know, so being able to send off your photos and have photos that you like, that you enjoy, that you've built kind of a profile for yourself and still, you know, still get those great photos. I think that's going to be a hit for a lot of photographers. Mm-hmm. Those photographers who, again, do understand that like maybe their strong suit is shooting rather than editing, and they'd rather get those photos back as fast as possible, still be able to share and still be able to get out and shoot more. So let's kind of explore, like, when is the right time to get into something like this? Because there is a cost associated with it. There is. Yeah. You have to have some knowledge of photography to know what it is that you want to get out of it. When is the right time to get into something like this? Is it the day that you get your camera, or is it a few months? Is it a few years down the road? When do you suggest?
So I wouldn't suggest day one. I would say once you've experimented with how you might want to edit, or what apps you might like, or maybe for some, like, it becomes more of like a paid hobby in some ways, you know, where it's not just purely for fun, but then at the same time, like, there are people who are using it just for fun. So it's very hard to say. I don't think it's a one size fits all type of thing. I think it's unique for everybody's situation, because we, like I said, we do have the people who are doing it for themselves, and we do have the people who are making a lot of money in their business for it. So it's the full spectrum of use cases. I wouldn't put one size fits all, unfortunately, in that.
I appreciate your honesty there. That was kind of a loaded question, wasn't it? Yeah. Tell me where is the start line? But like you said, it is kind of different for everybody, and that makes sense.
Yeah.
A lot of people do like the editing. It was not me. And I'll tell you, it took me a month to edit my first wedding, and I would have paid anything to be done with that. Like, any sooner, because it was horrendous. And I still look at those photos and think, what did I spend a month on? Like, these are terrible edits. So let's then talk about a little bit what it is that this. No, I take that back. There's going to be a stigma. I know that a lot of photographers right now are thinking to themselves, okay, well, if we're just outsourcing our editing, like, what is it that we're doing, right? Any raw form of a product is not the finished product. So what are we doing kind of outsourcing this? Yeah. Like, have you heard any like ethical concerns or just, personal things? And what are they?
We don't hear it as much as we used to. When we first started almost 4 years ago or 4 years ago, we heard it a lot more because we created this whole genre that didn't exist yet. But these days we don't hear it as much. But basically, there was a hesitation of, I'm outsourcing to AI to do this work for me. Am I giving my clients everything I can? And you have to look at it like this way. One, photographers have been outsourcing for generations, right? They've even film days, people were outsourcing to labs, film labs, to do all that work for them so that they didn't have to be in a darkroom slaving away doing all the processing and printing. So people have been doing it for generations. When it came time for digital, they're outsourcing to digital editing labs that are humans. And now you have AI that you can do it yourself and then do final touches on. So just to bring it back to, let's say, portrait photographers or a headshot photographer, right? I find headshot photographers is a place a lot of photographers, beginners, start because it's very systematic, right? And you don't have to be great to just get into it. Obviously, there's a big difference between like a professional headshot photographer and somebody who's just starting out. But I feel like the gap to get started is small. But let's say it's a headshot, right? You're sending it off to imagine to have your headshot done. You get it back. Now you open up your editor, whichever Adobe product it might be. And you can now do your fine retouching, remove blemishes that were there, or like, oh, there was a spot on my paper background, let's remove that, or whatever it might be, like the fine details that you may have enjoyed doing, or maybe stuff that just imagine doesn't do for you. So you're taking care of flyaway hairs and stuff that the AI can't do or doesn't do at the moment. And a lot of these human editors now are starting to use AI to do that tedious, mundane stuff. And now even the human editors are, the money you would pay for a human editor, they're spending that time doing the retouching rather than the core, more boring stuff. So I would recommend to not look at it like an ethics thing, but more of like, what can I do with that time back of the stuff that I just, all that time slaving away behind a computer editing? I mean, for the new photographers, you're not used to it at this point, I guess, but you could be doing so much more. Like, let's say you're just getting into photography. You did a family session. It's even your own family, right? You did set your camera up on a tripod. You shot your own family session. And now you're, for the next 4 or 5 hours, you're in your office on the computer editing versus sending it off to imagine having it back in 2 minutes. And that those four to six hours, you're now playing with your grandkids or your kids or whatever it might be, rather than being in an office editing photos.
Yeah.
Like, so there's, again, like, there's no one size fits all, but there is a way for it to impact everybody and still be ethical.
There are two ways to bring home more money with your photography business. You either get more clients or you spend less of the money that you make. CloudSpot Studio helps you keep more of what you earn. With the lowest payment processing fees in the industry, the average photographer will save $300 annually. And that's just more money to invest in essential gear like a new flash or a sweet camera bag. You know, one that is perfect for storing all of the wedding day snacks that you can pack. But it's not just about savings. CloudSpot Studio is designed to streamline your workflow. Easily organize shoots, send contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and you're really going to enjoy the hassle-free payments. So sign up for a free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com, and as a bonus, you're going to get access to my exclusive wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires at no additional cost. Why let fees chip away at your profits? Empower your photo journey with CloudSpot and watch your business soar. I would imagine that this would also help those who are transitioning from maybe like a full-time or like a W-2 job into going full-time to get there quicker, or at least alleviate the stress. Because if you're a wedding photographer, you go out on weekend, like half of your weekend is already gone because you're shooting a wedding. And now how many either additional wedding or weekend days or just evenings are you spending editing? It seems like this would be able to get that time back so that you can continue to market more weddings. I love that.
Yeah. There's a, unfortunately, I've heard this story from multiple Imaginers, but this one really struck a nerve or struck a chord, whatever you want to call it, when she told me the story. One person got divorced, and at the time she was not shooting too much. She was not taking on many paid jobs. It was like more, I'm at the dance school or gymnastics school for my kid, and I'm taking pictures. And every so often that school would hire her to just do the photos for the school, because she was there already. And she got divorced, and she knew she couldn't live with one, whatever money she was making on her own salary, whatever it was. So she almost lost her house. And then she discovered Imagine, and she realized, oh, I can go to other dance schools and other gymnastics schools, and like, I could take on a lot of schools and a lot of the photos for the kids and just use Imagine to knock out the editing and the culling real fast. And we saved her house. She's now making money to pay her mortgage on one salary. And she took on a lot of schools, and she's just able to manage it as a solo photographer and now a single mom. And yeah, I'm sure she's still stressed, but far less than what it could have been otherwise. And she could have lost her house.
Wow. So, that is incredible. That is incredible.
Yeah. And I'm not quite sure she was a beginner when this all went down originally, but she was shooting for a while for sure. I don't think she was taking on many jobs, you know, paid jobs at that point, though. But,
well, probably because she didn't have the time, right, to edit. And like, she had the family. She had all these things going on. That is a great story. So, yeah, I mean, there you go. Yeah. It can help you to achieve full time if that's what you want quicker, or allow you to be that weekend warrior without having to spend all of your additional time editing. That is super cool. Yeah. That is super cool.
Yeah.
When it comes to getting your photos back, what does the process look like? When we send off our photos, say that they're in, as you said, they could be Adobe products, but let's just say that it's in Lightroom Classic. You send it off. There's no edits done to it. You send them off to Imagine. When you get them back, are they JPEGs that are fully edited, or are they still the RAWs with a sidecar that have all the edited information? Yeah. What does it look like when you get it back?
Yeah. So long and short of it is still your RAW files or JPEGs, depending on what you shoot, non-destructive, just as if you edited it yourself. So to get a little more technical, for those who are interested in the technical parts of it, Lightroom catalog is basically a database, okay? So Lightroom also has a feature where you can turn on XMP support if you want Lightroom to read and write XMP files. It's off by default on new installs. When you send it to Imagine, we are then editing it, sending it back, and we are writing all of the edit data directly back into the database of your catalog. So we're not actually writing the XMP file, but once you open Lightroom, if you have XMPs turned on, then it is Lightroom is then writing the XMP of all the edits. So yes and no XMPs, but it is injected right into Lightroom as if you did it yourself. You would never know Imagine did it unless you look at the history, and you will see Imagine and then the name of the profile that was used to edit shows up in the history. Otherwise, it would look like you did it. When it comes to the folders, editing from a folder, we are writing the XMP files back to that folder for you. So
when you get images back, if there is something that you want to tweak, maybe it's a little warmer than you wanted, cooler than you expected, you can still make those tweaks. You can see what Imagine did, and then you can still adjust those tweaks as if it was your
photos. Yeah, you can adjust everything. You can do those final edits. And then if you used a personal AI profile, which learns from either your preset or from your edits, then you can actually fine tune that profile and send that those final edits back to us. And over time, your profile can be triggered to retrain based on all that new data. Mm. So it just gets smarter and smarter and smarter as time goes by.
Okay, this may be a wild question here, but I'm going to push you, Scott. Okay. This is where we're going. How important do you think it is for new photographers still to learn a tool like Lightroom and learn to edit?
So our goal is not to remove the creativity from the photographer. Yes, we're going to be adding things that are to remove the tedious parts of everything, right? So we have skin smoothing available, and we have the subject mask and crop and straighten and more to come. But we're not adding things that are going to be completely removing the photographer from the equation, because we want you to still be in control over everything. We want you to be able to be creative with your work. We just want to remove that boring stuff from your plate so you can focus on the creative stuff, or focus on family time, or focus on the, you know, expanding the business, or going on a trip, or watching Netflix, or whatever it is you want to do. I don't see us ever removing editing from the equation completely, just aiding into giving you more time to focus on the more important stuff of it all.
I think photographers already are kind of scared of AI. They're scared that it's going to take away their jobs, because people can just take a selfie on their phone and then upload it somewhere, and now magically they have some sort of like wild professional looking headshot. So it's like AI has this weird connotation to it, to where it's so helpful when it comes to coming up with ideas and, you know, creating marketing material. But then also it's kind of taking our jobs, and like, it's scary. So for you, I'd love to know just kind of like, what are your like thoughts on AI? Because there's no denying it's both scary and really exciting.
Oh yeah.
What do you think
the
future of AI holds for photographers?
That's so funny. So on my show, because imagine it's a podcast called Workflows. And that is actually one of the questions I ask to every guest. What does the future of AI photography look like to you? So nice for the coin to be flipped. Of course, I'm living in the AI world, and I'm living in the photography world on a daily basis. Yes, there are some scary things. There's so many things that are just really, really cool that are not scary, don't have any ethical concerns for me. I look at all of this like, first of all, one, AI has been in our lives way longer than what most people realize, right? It's in your car and it's been there for a long time. It's in your camera and it's been there for a long time. It's just getting better and better. In a way, it's kind of been in your flashes, you know, in your little speed lights with TTL. Like, it's not true AI, but it is machine learning, and they're getting better and better. So I think, one, for me at least, people need to realize, like, there's good AI and there's scary AI. And I think we as photographers just need to embrace and understand how the good AIs work, whether it's Imagine or whether it's what Photoshop can do with its AI, you know, because like generative fill of like putting a random bird into a photo. Yes, that could have some scary, you know, outputs to it, depending on the person who's doing it. But at the same time, if you did a horrible crop in camera and you need to do a generative expand, like, that's a beautiful thing to be able to fix a mistake you made in camera, right?
Yeah.
So beautiful. And then there's gallery solutions that are adding AI, right, into their galleries that make it easier for clients to find their photos. That's not scary. That's a nice use that helps people in the end. I mean, the list can go on of good AI that's just beneficial to us at the end. There's emails, right? So majority of the world using Gmail, right?
Yes.
For their emails. Gmail has AI, right? Whether you're using it in your photography business or just your personal email, Gmail has AI now that can help start emails for you. But then there's third-party apps like Superhuman, Canary, Spark, that all have AI that you can literally open up the AI and say, find my email that I talked about this and summarize the entire thread. And yeah,
that's
like,
cool.
So I go back and forth between different email apps. I used to use Spark until they went to subscription. Superhuman is a subscription. Canary is, you can buy a one-time lifetime purchase. That's what I did. And now I'm playing with Canary more. But I can literally just load the AI tab and just tell it what I need from all of my entire lifetime email archive from Gmail, and it summarizes whatever I need for me. So like, there's things like that, that not necessarily is actually with a camera, but can still help your photography in ethical, useful ways that I love. I mean, but again, I'm a technology guy, so.
Yeah, I think it comes down to like all of these things at the end of the day are tools, right? My daughter for Christmas, she wants to be very handy. She likes building things. So we bought her this little toolbox from Lowe's. Mm-hmm. And inside there's like a little hammer and a little tape measure and stuff like that. And she wanted to build a little birdhouse. So like we started building this tiny little birdhouse. And it's like for her, this nail and this hammer, the perfect tool to keep all this thing together. Yeah. I wouldn't give her a nail gun. But I think we can all agree that like a nail gun is a better tool than a hammer and a nail. But it all depends on like what, how you're using it. So like, I understand being scared of it, but like, I too am there with you. Like, I'm so excited about all these things that are coming out because they're allowing me more time to be, to do the things that I love, to be more creative in the ways that I like to be creative. And I think that's what gets lost a lot is that I think that the people who are going to take a selfie of themselves and get like a professional headshot, they're not the people who would have hired like a professional photographer anyway. So it's like, that's fine. They can go ahead and do that. You know, if an entire office is going to need headshots, they're going to hire a photographer to do that. Yeah. As a one man band here on this podcast and as a photographer, it's like, if I need help to do something, I'm not going to go to AI to just have clients email me photos of themselves like that they took with their phone and then generate wedding photos for them.
Right.
I'm going to want to be there to take those photos and I'm going to use AI to do all of the other things like the email management and the editing and stuff like that.
You know, it's interesting. So two things I want to mention. One is like right now we're recording this in Zoom, right? And you've got an AI bot taking meeting notes for us right now.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
I use a different company than what you're using. They do the same exact thing, right? And that in itself, right? Such a simple thing that photographers can do for their client meetings. Have an AI join your meeting because most of these meetings are now virtual and take notes for you. So you're not staring at your notepad taking notes while you should be face to face with your client. Like, brilliant, right? It's a simple thing. What I also wanted to mention based on what you just said about like you wouldn't generate AI for like your artwork, for example, of your podcast guests and stuff. Shutterfest. Are you aware of Shutterfest?
Yeah.
That happens in so every year in St. Louis, the same venue, they have the same event. This is their 10th year. And last year, 2023. So, you know, you go to a trade show, these large trade shows, they have banners of all the speakers hanging from the ceilings, right?
Mm-hmm.
So last year at Shutterfest, every banner, every speaker banner was AI. They took everybody's photos, ran them through AI, and every single person, not one was the real photo. Every single one was an AI generated thing. And the purpose was AI is a hot topic. Let's get people talking about how crazy these banners look. And it did a job. The whole Shutterfest Facebook group was talking about it. Wherever you went on the trade show floor, people were talking about it. People were walking around trying to find their own banners. It was just, you're talking about like, this person looks like a supermodel. Like this person looks like a supermodel in real life, but the AI destroyed them in the banner. Like, you know, like it's just so crazy that, you know, in a good way that conversation happened at that show. And it's just interesting that somebody went through the effort to actually do that and to cause that dialogue to happen. So I think whether it's us talking about it, whether it's something like at those events, these are important conversations people have so that everybody's thoughts about it are known and discussed. Because ethics, of course, come into play and there's legal issues that come into play. There's so many different things. So, yeah, I just had to bring that up. I thought it was so interesting last year.
Yeah, that's interesting. I had not heard of that because it's like on one hand, it's a conference for photographers put on by photographers. Why would they use AI to do that? But at the same time, I see how that is interesting to start asking those questions and having those conversations because there's no avoiding it. You know, it's going to have to happen or it's going to happen in so many places. And I mean, I can tell you from just personal experience, like having these meeting notes being taken by AI, like after this is done, it tells me how engaged I was with you. It tells me like all this information. It gives me like action steps. If I were to be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get you this or I'm going to, you know, send you this thing. It'll list those things down rather than me having to write them down. And as somebody doing a podcast, I typically write a lot of notes, and I don't know if you've noticed, I've written down zero notes during our podcast today. but normally, if you would have asked me 6 months ago, I'd have to show you my Facebook or my Final Cut timelines. I'd have to remove like 5-10 seconds at a time where somebody would end what they were saying just because I was finishing writing down what I was writing. And then that just is like a weird break in that conversation to, yes. Again, now to have this tool where we can focus on doing the things that we're good at and what we're most creative at is yeah. is so cool and so exciting. And the idea that Imagine can come in and do that for us, for photographers, right? Because to me, you're not going to call yourself a photographer if all you do is edit photos. You're not going to call yourself right. a photographer if you are really good at the marketing and the business side. Like at that point, photography is what you do. But if you identify as a photographer, everything that helps you do more of that should be praised. We should be like saying thank you so much for these different types of tools. But at the end of the day, it comes down to realizing the type of photographer you are. If you enjoy this over that, and if these tools are going to be right for you, because they're not right for everybody. As I could see definitely using this, definitely using Imagine in my weddings, because it's like, I just want to get those out of there. But I do find some yeah. personal fulfillment in editing like my own personal photos of our family. So it's like, I yeah. probably wouldn't send those out. So again, it's recognizing the tools and when they're good for you and when they're not good for you. And yeah. The fact that it's available is so exciting. Yep. I think because yeah. it just opens up so many doors for photographers. So,
yeah. And available for anybody in any part of their photography journey, like right. any. It's a, yeah. it is a beautiful thing.
I can't think of many other tools like in photography that are like that. Like I would say Lightroom probably, because like it's good to just get a jump on it. But like you wouldn't give somebody day one a flagship, you know, I don't even know what the latest flagship like mirrorless cameras are, but like a 1DX Mark IV or whatever, you know, you wouldn't right. give them that camera. You would want them to grow into it. But this is a tool yeah. that can grow with you and would only get better with time. So yeah. that's super exciting. Scott, we are just at the end of our time today, but I want you to share with me, I think you had mentioned earlier that there might be some more things around the corner. I don't know if you want to share yes. those, but tell me more about where we can find out about Imagine, but also the Workflows podcast.
Sure. Yeah. So some of the things coming to Imagine, I mentioned one is the support for folders. So that is, by the time this episode airs, it could already be out. And let's see, we got culling right now. The way our culling works is that once our AI analyzes your culling, your photos, it then again injects everything back into Lightroom. So all of your ratings would be there. But we have Culling Studio coming, which is an in-app culling review feature, which you can fly through super fast all of the photos that we select. We group them. So you can look at the groupings and swap out what is the keeper and painlessly move right into editing right from your selections without having to go between Imagine and Lightroom. Just do it all in this one seamless flow. And we also have now the ability to duplicate profiles is out. So that actually came out 2 days ago. So that is definitely out by the time this episode airs. So that feature, basically, if you have a profile that you love for your weddings and you do something that's slightly different for your family photos, for example, you can now duplicate your photos. I mean, duplicate your profile, rename it, the duplicate to something else, to family, for example, and then use our profile adjustments feature to adjust the profile to be, you know, different for whatever you need for your family. So you can have as many profiles as you want, and now you can easily duplicate a profile without having to make one from another batch of 3,000 or more photos. So that's just some of what is either new or coming and just very, very, very exciting. Where you can find Imagine is imagineai.com. And we're all over the place, Imagine AI. And we've got a Facebook community, of course, that I run. And we have our own podcast, Workflows Photography Podcast, which if you're listening to one podcast and you want to hear another... So it's a fun show where we talk about all sorts of photography workflows from a variety of different genres of photographers and a bunch of other interesting things. So, yeah.
I got to say, Scott, you're one of the people who it's like when I see workflows pop up on my podcast player, I'm like, even though today I'm not a professional photographer, like I gave up uh-huh. weddings, I love listening to it because I love hearing the different. One of the things is that like you don't know what you don't know. Right. And it's like, I feel like I got out of weddings right before AI kind of started to take over. And not that everything that people talk about is AI related, but there's been so many conversations of things that like I didn't even know existed. And it's just so mm-hmm. interesting to kind of expand your world in that way. And I think for new photographers getting into photography, having exposure to the different things that are available and how other photographers are working and what works for them and what doesn't work for them is so crucial to be able to figure out how to build the right either hobby or business for you. And I can't think of literally any other podcast that does it the way that you do it. So I can't praise it enough. And I encourage everybody to go give it a listen. So Scott, thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate you sharing everything that you did. And we're going to have to do this again.
Definitely. It's always fun to chat with you, whether about this or talking shop. I love it.
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of the Beginner Photography Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please share it with a friend. Start a conversation. Grow together. That is it for this week. Remember, the more that you shoot today, the better of a photographer you will be tomorrow. Talk soon.
Thank you for listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. Keep shooting, and we'll see you next week.